then you're out of the military, and then you decide it's time to go to work for the family business.
Well, they wanted to assign me at that point to Vietnam fighter, which I wanted 5 years sooner, badly. So they said, we have your assignment here and this and that, but you have one little window here you can get out. It was a one-year tour, and so all the guys that had left my training squadron went over and fought, came back in 1 year. So I went around and talked to them. I said, what do you think? They said, Tom, don't go, because we're not fighting to win. We're fighting with our hands tied behind us, and guys are dying for nothing. They all said, get out. Some of them at the end, they were so worthless, and rather than dropping their bomb, they just go out over the ocean, pick them off, and come back. Because every day, they flew the same route, the same altitude, at the same time, and they knew exactly what the samples, and we're just shooting them out of the air. And they said, we're fodder, target fodder, is what they called them. And they said one day they were finally approved. They waited 4 years to bomb this bridge between Hanoi and the town there to the west of them. I can't think of it, Haiphong or something, where they brought all supplies in from China. They wanted to knock that bridge out because they had slowed down those supplies coming into Hanoi. And so finally they got permission from McNamara. So they went in there. In those days, they didn't have all the electrical equipment, so you'd break down through anti-aircraft fire and break out from the cloud, and you have about 2 seconds to spot the bridge, zero in on it, pick the bomb, and pull up and go. So they went in there. Instead of hitting the fifth arch, they hit the second. The bridge went boom, down in the water, and they lost two planes and lost two men. Fighter pilots are like, you know, my brothers, because they depend on each other for life, flying the wing, fighting the MiGs, covering for everybody, rescue and all that sort of thing. But they were excited, even though they lost two comrades. They were thrilled that they accomplished the mission. The squadron commander walked in, a colonel, and read a letter from McNamara, a letter of commendation for hitting the wrong arch. And he said, Tom, if he had been in the room, they would have killed him. Well, I heard that story. I said, well, that's not for me. If I'm going to fight, I'm going to fight to win. I'm not going to sacrifice myself for nothing.
But they destroyed the bridge.
Yeah. They accomplished it, but he won the center because he's afraid of casualties for the people living on the edge of the river. Anyway, I leave Air Force December of 68. I come back. My dad says, what do you want to do? I said, I want to start at the bottom. I want to understand this place. So I want to work line service. I want to understand the fuel business, how that works. And so I put on a uniform and everything. I'm standing there, and this T-38 goes by, and this pilot standing there, and I've been feeling the airplanes and stuff. I said, golly, last month I was flying one of those. And he just, oh, yeah, sure. Here you were sweeping floors, and last month you were telling me you're flying a supersonic T-38, and I didn't have the heart to tell him how I got there. I spent 6 months on the line service, then I went to parts, spent about 9 months there. And then I wanted to get in the sales. They didn't have any charter departments, so I'm going to start a charter department. So I started charter and got the plane and went and got the plane and got the pilots and put it together. Pretty soon, I'd make more money than just about anybody at the company from the very first charter deals there ever was at Tulsa International. One of the first in the country that just came out where you could fly the charter like that, where it was legal and you had to get all these licenses and stuff like that. So I did that from 68 until 76. That's a long time. That's 8 years. But I started getting burned out. I wanted to go into sales, but my dad had these sales and you just couldn't fire them. I was really getting jittery. I said, it's time for me to move on here. So a friend of mine was making movies in Hollywood as an actor. He came into town. He had a script. He says, Tom, can you help me raise some money? So I went out and raised $400,000 just like that. I said, you know, I'm going to do this, but you know what? I'm going to produce this thing. I'm going to be in charge. Sounds like an egomaniac, but you can get more done when you're at the top. And so I went to Hollywood, 76, I produced a film. Well, prior to that, in 75, I put money into a film called Macon County Line with this guy. I made a ton of money.
He was a friend of yours.
He starred in Macon County Line. He's a top actor in it.
And what's his name?
Jesse Vint. Jesse Vint III.
And how did you know him?
I grew up with him in high school. And he was in Lancers. I was in Lancers at the social club in high school.
At Edison.
At Edison. He went to Hollywood as soon as he got out of the Army. He had served 2 years in the Army.
So he comes back and he gets you involved.
In 75, 74 for Macon County Line. Max Baer Jr. produced Macon County Line. Dad was the world champion, remember, boxing. This is Junior. Played Jethro.
Yes.
Beverly Hillbillies?
Yeah.
That's Max Baer Jr. So I go to Hollywood out there. You know, I'm hanging out in this mansion and we're having a grand old time. So then I said, I'm going to produce my own film. I'm going to show that I can do something else besides make a charter department. My dad said, go do it. And he furnished money. Half of it I raised from other people and he furnished the other half. I think about it. So I go out there and I made this movie called The Black Oak Conspiracy. It was a good film. I broke even. In fact, I made about $300,000 when I think about it. But what happened was he owed me lots more money. The distributor, which is a very famous guy, Roger Corman. He made all the B-movies back then. He found some of the major movie stars. Roger Corman was the king of making this movie, and so he bought my film. He gave me $300,000, but there was another $300,000 coming on top of that, and he wouldn't pay it to me. He gave the book, said, I've never been sued. I've been honest. That's a lie. I sued him. But the time you hire the attorneys, the time you do the auditing of the books, I got it all back. But by the time I spent them, I broke even. So I said, you know what? I worked my tail off. I broke even. I had a wonderful time. It took 2 years to make and get it going. And it was a theatrical release all over the United States, all around the world. I saw it everywhere. And I thought, this is not the business for me. So I'm going back to Tulsa. So I come back to Tulsa. About that time, a guy named Frank Larry, salesman, he wanted to go on his own. He quit. Dad said, there's your chance. Go sell airplanes. I broke every record. I got trophies everywhere. I sold 78, 79, 80, 81, 82. 4 years and just made a ton of money. In 1982, my father, I think, was starting to fade. He said, Tom, I'm thinking about selling. Finally, by 1985, I said, let me tell you something. Either I buy majority control of this company or I'm going. So my sisters, we worked out a deal for them. My dad had enough money to live on. I got majority control of Tulsa Air in 1985. That continued until 1992 when I bought my sisters out, and everybody out now owned it 100%. We made a lot of money from the King Air when it came out. They call it the King Air 200, 1974 up to 1982. Very popular airplane. We made about $10 million. And I said, Dad, you get my sisters, y'all divide the money up like you want. You take every dime of it. All I want is Tulsa Air and their assets here. And by the way, I don't know if you remember this, in 82, remember we had the crash in 81, 82, 83, 84, 85, 86 were lean years. I bought it at the bottom. He said, you'll lose your ass, word for word. And I said, well, that's mine to lose. Take your money and be happy. So I took it. And by 1987, I turned around, I was back in the black, I was making money.
In the movie, Black Oak Conspiracy, who starred in that?
Jesse Vent, who also was a leader in Macon County Line. Karen Carlson, gosh, she was Miss Arkansas. She was runner-up number two in Miss America. In fact, you know, when we were doing the post-production on the film, she let me live in the house with her. Jesse Vent was living with her at that time. They got together on the set. And so they let me stay there if we're doing post-production. We had a really good cast and a well-written story. Max helped us a little bit. Max Barrett Jr. gave us some advice on how to do things and supported us. He didn't make any money, but just for the fun of it, you know.
Were you involved in watching the actual making of the movie?
Oh, yeah.
And did you enjoy that process?
Oh, unbelievable. Outside of Sacramento, there's a little town. I can't think of the name of it now, but it's beautiful. They found gold, that river up there. Well, they put a dam up and formed a lake. It was beautiful. The scenery was beautiful. And of course, I had never made a film, but I learned fast. So I was involved, and then pretty soon I had to really just take some of it over. Not maybe as far as directing, but as far as the story style and making things happen and showing up and everybody doing everything. I mean, I ran the show because I could do it. I did a little cameo in it.
Oh, really?
And just for the fun of it.
Are there copies out there today of Black Oak?
If you want one, I'll give you a CD to it.
What did you do in it?
My friend Jesse Vent got in a fight with a guy who was bothering his girlfriend or something, and I got a hat on from a little hamburger place. They're fighting out there, and I run out. I have a gun in my hand. I shoot him. Hey, stop it, stop it. You guys quit fighting there. What are you doing? Yeah, you can't do this at my place. And I look down, and I see the guy's name in the movie, Jingo. He was from this town. I said, hey, Jingo, good seeing you. How long you been here? He said, oh, about 5 minutes. Cut to the next thing.
It wasn't thrown away on the cutting room floor. It made it into the...
Well, if they wanted their paycheck.
Right.
They wanted me to buy all the stuff I did.
So how did that do box office-wise?
Like I said, now that I get my money back, made $300,000, then I had to sue Roger Corman. Yeah. Look up Roger Corman. He's quite a guy. Quite a buy on him now. By the time I got through suing him, I broke even. I said, that's enough. If I can't trust people to keep from cheating me. And that's still the major problem in Hollywood.
Did you look back thinking you'd want to do anything more in Hollywood, even after you made
money? Well, you know, if somebody would come up and give me $500 million or something. I don't know. And I didn't have any idea. I'd love to go make another movie. I mean, I know where all those people are, and I'd love to. It was fun. I enjoyed it. It was creative, and I met great people and famous people. And not that I care about the fame, but when I was hanging out with them, because Jesse Benton knew them and all that, they were like buddies. They weren't like, you're a Hollywood guy. I'm thrilled. Give me an autograph. I got to know some of the top actors.
But it still fascinates you. And if somebody said today, you'd even get involved in something in Hollywood today.
Well, I might get involved. But the big thing I got going for right now, I have a grandson. He's a senior at OU. He's taking all the flying lessons and getting a business degree. My goal is, before I turn into a vegetable someday, is to try to teach him this business. I'd like to see the business carry on. I told my daughter, I said, look, I will give the company to my grandson or your son if you'll pay the death tax. And we're going to try to mitigate that minimum. So it's an emotional thing for us to share. But I could probably do both.
Your grandson, his name is?
Tom Cleeter.
Is he interested in the business? Have you talked to him about it?
Yes, I have. And he's taking all the flying lessons, getting his business degree. And
doing the same thing you did. Kind of
I think, yeah, I set the mold, and he seems like he's there. And he's a handsome-looking guy, and I just love him to death.